We have talked on a number of occasions on this program and all over Federal News Radio, have written about on federalnewsradio.com, the acquisition workforce, and ACT IAC also thinking about the acquisition workforce, a white paper called Recommendations and Strategies for Improving the Recruiting and Retention of the Federal Government Acquisition Workforce, the subject of that as well. And my guest to talk about it is one of the primary movers and shakers behind this report. It's Jeff Shen, Vice President of Red Team Consulting. Jeff, thank you for being on the program today.
Francis, thanks for having me here. I appreciate it.
Happy to do it. There's a lot of good stuff in this thing, and I have to say right up front, one of my favorite things about it is it's only about 11 pages long. So it's not one of these things that goes on, and you start printing, and you realize a half an hour later that you've used up half a ream of paper.
Absolutely. We try to get right to the point here.
Well, and that's what's good about this, because we have talked on and on, as I said, about this subject, and it seems like with all due respect to all the people and all the big brains that have talked about this issue, that seems to be elusive sometimes. Getting to the point, which is getting these people on board, up to speed on doing their jobs at something that every single person I've ever talked to about the subject says takes 5 to 7 years for somebody to be really equipped to be able to do one of these on their own. And so you've got some ideas in here that people might not want to hear, but that seem to be very practical for meeting this challenge for agencies. What I'd like to do is just kind of go through them piece by piece and talk about them, recruiting and retention, and then we'll wrap it up later on in the half hour.
Sure.
Obviously, what you call very nicely hiring from the commercial sector and what a lot of people call poaching is one thing that agencies really have to take a look at. It might not be the desired outcome, but you got to get these people in where you can get them, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we were talking about when we said hiring from the commercial sector. You know, understanding that people do switch between government and industry and vice versa. Interestingly enough, when we came up with this particular idea, we were right in the midst of the financial crisis. And so our first thought was, well, why don't we hire from all of those people who are, for lack of a better way of saying it, unemployed. But there were a lot of naysayers in the group saying, well, you know, acquisition requires such a specified skill set, you just can't hire an ex-financial person. And so really the basis of this, we thought, was, well, you know what, from the entire commercial sector, when you look at those folks that might have the appropriate skill sets, maybe there are folks that dealt with contracts from the commercial side, looked at legal documents from the commercial side, or lawyers that we can try to pull from. And so that's what we really concluded from hiring from the commercial sector, was looking at folks that have skill sets that are most closely aligned to those who do acquisition in the government.
What's on somebody's resume if they haven't actually done acquisition for the government, or they haven't actually been on the industry end of working in government acquisition? What's on somebody's resume that says this is somebody that might be good at this?
Well, you know, what I hear from contracting officers and acquisition officials is that, you know, obviously they need to be extremely analytical. And these are folks that may have day-to-day jobs that involve very process-oriented structures that they work with, could be involved in technology or non-technology, but they need to be able to look at a certain problem and tackle the problem in looking at it from an analytical perspective. So you can even look at project managers as an example. Lots and lots of project managers in various industries in the commercial sector that acquisition officials said, you know, they think of things in the same way that we would from a contract side. You know, those are the types of people that we want to look at. So that's one thing that you could look at in terms of people's resumes.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear you say that, because I have to be honest with you. I've asked that question of people in industry, of people in government, and I seem to always get a variation of the answer, we're not sure, but we'll know it when we see it.
Yeah.
And so it's fascinating to me to actually have a concrete issue there. Another thing that you talk about is hiring from the military. What is it about military people in acquisition or outside of acquisition that predisposes them, based on what you just said, are the good qualifications of people who may not have formal acquisition experience?
Well, you know, when you look at the military, I mean, and it really does serve a couple of purposes. You know, you look at our returning vets who are fighting overseas in the wars, and you look at them as trying to find a way to serve not only them and helping them get them employed, but also trying to fill this void of the acquisition workforce. And also, a lot of the returning military might have the necessary certifications and qualifications that a lot of folks in the commercial sector simply don't have. So really what you're doing is starting ahead of the game by looking at those folks that are coming from the military.
The military folks also obviously have the commitment to be able to work inside an organization, which a lot of people say, a lot of hiring managers say, given what they're seeing from the younger people that are coming out of college, not as much experience or willingness to find a place in an organization and stick with it.
Right, exactly.
I'm trying to think of a way to say that nicely.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what it is. That's what it comes down to, is you look at one of the top fears that commercial folks have in working for the government, you know, whether it's acquisition or not, it's that it's very slow-paced, it's very boring, and things of that nature. And the fact of the matter is, when you talk to people who work for the government, it's not that at all. And for those who work in the military, I mean, they're used to maybe some of the government processes that are in place that just commercial folks aren't accustomed to, or you know, may not feel comfortable working in that type of environment.
You also talk about non-business degrees for the acquisition workforce. Is there enough, I guess, certification is the term that I'll use for lack of a better one. Is that really the ticket, though, it having these programs that acquisition people can go through and then be rubber stamped on the forehead to say you're okay, you're approved?
You know, that's from what I understand from talking with the contracting officers and acquisition officials that were part of this committee to help develop these recommendations. You know, they were saying, yes, you know, the certification programs are nice to have, and yes, you need that rubber stamp to officially certify you that you can work on acquisitions. But that aside, they said the most important thing is, they said, you know, I just want someone who can break down a problem, analyze it for me, and you know, get it out the door. You know, they didn't care if they had business degrees or not. And he said that what they were telling me was that there was too much emphasis on these types of degrees, such that they're afraid they're shutting the door on people who could be well qualified to help with the acquisitions, but just aren't given the chance. And there was a particular example that I won't name this individual, but there was an acquisition official from a civilian agency that said her best contracting officers don't even have business degrees. They have English degrees, philosophy degrees, history degrees. Somehow they found a way to get in the door to take these jobs on, and she said, they're my superstars.
It strikes me that people in those kinds of disciplines would be good cognitive thinkers who are able, as you said before, to be analytical of a piece of writing, you know, and the response to, you know, the proposals that the vendors send in,
mm-hmm.
able to analyze them, especially in a day and age when you're not just looking for the lowest price on a widget, when you're analyzing service proposals.
Right.
I imagine that level of cognitive thinking has to be a lot higher.
It does. And the closest parallel that I can draw in the commercial side is, you know, you look at the number of folks that go into law school, and there are a lot of folks who don't have business degrees and have similar degrees that I just noted, philosophy, English, history degrees, that end up being fantastic lawyers. And I'm not trying to compare lawyers to contracting officials by any means, but when you look at the thinking that's required and you look at the regulations that are required to be studied, you know, very similar in terms of the analytical ability that's required in doing acquisitions.
All right, there's a handful more here of recommendations that you're making for building the acquisition workforce when it comes to recruiting. The major one I want to talk about is internship programs.
Mm-hmm.
These are getting a lot of play. OPM Director Barry has talked about internship programs in a number of different disciplines inside government.
Mm-hmm.
What's the advantage when it comes to the acquisition workforce?
Well, the advantage that it has is that it really does give, you know, obviously a younger person the ability to test out acquisition, because it is such an unknown when you're in college and not just sure what you should do, and they say, hey, try this internship program. And so it gives them a shorter project. I think some of the internship programs that are out there are less than 2 years. but it gets them to experience acquisition from a number of different disciplines. And allows them to go also from agency to agency to see how perhaps DOD conducts their acquisition compared to how a civilian agency conducts their acquisitions. So there's a huge advantage to let these folks try this out and then decide where they want to go to do this full time after the internship program is up.
Do we have enough of a body of knowledge to know whether the internship program yields a sufficient number of candidates that are qualified and willing to do the work that it's worth making the investment to do the program?
Yeah, you know, Francis, that's a great question. And in fact, you know, we had Department of Interior, National Business Center as a part of our study for this white paper, and I asked them that exact question because their program had been around for I think 4 years or so, or a few years, and I asked them, well, how successful has it been? And their response was, you know, they hadn't really tracked the statistics of folks that had graduated from the program, simply because they were getting such an increasing amount of interest that they had to keep that side of the program up, and they weren't following up with a lot of the folks that were graduating. Now, that being said, we had a couple of people actually in the internship program as part of the study, and they were just finishing up their second year, and they pretty much told me, they said, you know what, this is really exciting. We want to continue. In fact, I'm interviewing with DOD and Department of Interior and all these other places, and they'll be given great opportunities. So at least from that aspect, it seemed very promising.
The other one of these that may be a little bit controversial is the referral program, which essentially is bonuses when you bring somebody in, very common in the private sector.
Right.
And yet, in a day and age when Congress is looking for any opportunity they can to slash budgets, it would seem that this would be something that would be hard to get in to get started for agencies that aren't doing it now.
Right, and you know, I would agree with that comment. It's one of those things where when the group was brainstorming as to what would really you know, spur the interest of a lot of government people to attract their friends and their network, you know, the recommendation was made, why not have a referral program? And we acknowledge there are going to be challenges throughout Congress to try to get something like this, but the, you know, statistic we point out is you look at some companies who rely on at least 50% of their workforce from referrals, and we said there has to be some aspect of that that we can apply to a government referral program, you know, understanding that it could take 4, 5, 6, who knows how many years to get in place. But it was something that we at least wanted to put in the white paper to spur people's thinking to get into that direction.
And it strikes me that if the ROI wasn't good, private sector companies wouldn't do it with the frequency that they do it. And so, as you say, certainly something that should be in the mix.
Right.
Let's talk about some retention strategies when we come back from the break. My guest is Jeff Shen, Vice President of Red Team Consulting and a lead on ACT-IAC's recommendations and strategies for improving the recruiting and retention of the federal government acquisition workforce. Acquisition workforce is an issue on both sides of the government industry equation, and we'll talk more with Jeff about how you keep the good people once you got them when In-Depth continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
20,000 feet over Kandahar, fuel running low, ground troops need air support. The solution? EADS North America's KC-45 aerial refueling tanker. Offering the most range, fuel, and payload, it's the only tanker in the Air Force competition that's flying now when our troops need it. EADS North America will put 48,000 Americans to work building the KC-45 in the U.S. Proven capability, ready now. EADS North America's KC-45. See it at kc45now.com.
Paid for by EADS North America.
Here's Dr. Steven Andra, Senior Health Advisor to the Secretary, VA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Health IT, sponsored by CA Technologies.
I think that as Health IT helps transform healthcare in this country, Health IT itself will also be transformed. I don't believe that the way we're looking at Health IT today is going to be the way that we use it and tools that we have tomorrow.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
How do you keep your infrastructure safe without limiting your people and productivity? CA Technologies let you control every use of every IT asset by everyone who accesses your systems. Can you say yes to new capabilities? Can you enforce defense in detail, not just defense in depth? Can you empower your people while protecting your systems? With CA Technologies, you can. To learn how, visit ca.com/security.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
95 regulations falling to the Securities and Exchange Commission. Some of those regs need to be in place within a year.
Harvey Pitt is Chief Executive Officer, Kalorama Partners, and former Chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission.
The staff of the SEC is very expert and they're very well focused. But I think in this case, the SEC is going to have to outsource some of its efforts.
Hear the entire interview online. FederalNewsRadio.com/Federal Drive.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Jeff Shen is Vice President of Red Team Consulting. They work with government agencies in a number of different areas. One of them is recruiting and retention for the acquisition workforce. IAC, writing about the acquisition workforce. And one of the issues that we talked about on this program, Jeff, about a week and a half ago with former OPM Director Linda Springer, with Ron Sanders, formerly at ODNI, Chief Human Capital Officer there, and with Angela Bailey, now at OPM, was about that very issue. Once we have good people in government, it's the old sales axiom. It's easier to keep a customer than to get a new one.
Right.
And the same thing is the case in the workforce in general and, of course, in the acquisition workforce. One of the points that all three of those people made that I found interesting is the fact that they all say, and other HR people have said, that one of the most important elements of retention is the onboarding process, making sure that from the very first day, people know what it is that they're going to be doing. Let's jump back to the internship program that you talked about. I imagine that's an excellent way for somebody to really get a flavor of what it is that they're going to be doing and getting a sense of the mission, so to speak.
Absolutely. It was one of those things that those interns that we had as part of this committee that developed the white paper. You know, they explained to us is that one of the reasons why they were so interested to take part and continue their career in acquisitions was because the Department of Interior, in this case, took a lot of time to prepare them for, you know, what lay ahead. And they laid out all of the challenges that they would foresee and also ways to overcome those challenges and provided some mentorship on top of that to make sure that they didn't lose their way.
Now, mentorship is the first one of your recommended retention strategies for the acquisition workforce, Jeff. This paper says creating formal acquisition mentorship programs within all federal agencies will help tremendously with the concept of onboarding. How far along are we in having these mentorships all over the acquisition workforce across agencies?
Well, I think some agencies are further along than others. You know, at least from the ones that had participated in our study. You know, they had noted that their mentorship programs were weak and they weren't as far along as they had hoped, to the extent where they, when they brought on new acquisition staff, contracting officers, contracting specialists, they really didn't have anything in place to make sure that they advanced in their career. And as we know, that's very important for even a younger person to advance in their career. They need someone to kind of look up to. And so they're still working on that. They had hoped that there would be some sort of either agency-wide or government-wide type of mentorship program through which they could follow. They really had nothing in place that they could follow.
You mentioned exit interviews, and I guess, honestly, my first thought was exit interview. If you're talking about retention at the exit interview, it's too late. They're already gone.
Yeah.
Luckily for the federal acquisition workforce, somebody narrow-minded like me isn't the one that's that understands the value of finding out exactly why it is that people do decide to make choices and move on.
Right, exactly. And you know, the whole purpose of the exit interview, especially even when you look at the commercial side, is, you know, understanding why people are leaving. And so we understand from looking at all different studies why people typically leave their jobs, whether it's, you know, their boss or not getting enough money or they're not challenged enough. But in order to understand why certain acquisition workforce are leaving, you know, we need to culminate that data and understand, okay, what do we need to do differently in order to retain them? So that was the whole purpose of having exit interviews in place. And I think some agencies do that well, but from the acquisition side, from what I was hearing from our contributors, was that when people leave, they just leave. There's no process in place to understand, you know, why they're leaving to go to the commercial sector or go to a different job.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like that's a tremendous body of knowledge that's going out the door with those people.
Right.
You also talk about rotational assignments, and you make some good points about the rotational assignments themselves. I also think that that probably just helps keep people fresh. This is something that DOD is already working on in a number of different areas pretty avidly.
Right, and this is one in which had a little bit of controversy because of the fact that, you know, when you know, we could advocate rotational assignments to keep people's work fresh, and that makes a lot of sense. But from the agency's perspective, it's often a challenge for them because they work so hard to train these acquisition staff to know, you know, perhaps certain regulations that pertain to their group. And so why would they want to let their top contracting officer go somewhere else? You know, despite the fact that this person may be unhappy, you know, they're usually reticent to let those people go and then bring in new people that they have to retrain in some aspects. And so there was a lot of value in it. At the same time, people thought of, okay, this could also bring some challenges with it.
I understand that, and it makes perfect sense. You groom somebody for an extended period of time, maybe even a decade, and then shuffle them off for a couple of years. But I keep hearing about how, especially managers, program managers, when an acquisition is done, are so burnt that they really are not able to take another project on right away anyway. And it would seem to me that might be an opportunity to let them reassign, maybe even a different agency entirely, and get a little taste of something for a period of time and to get their batteries recharged.
It's funny that you mentioned that, Francis. We had a couple of people in our group that actually cited that exact type of reference where a couple of the contracting officers had stated, you know, after you work on an acquisition for 1 to 2 years,
mm-hmm.
you know, we just want to do something differently. And they said it from the perspective of, we don't necessarily need to go to another agency.
Yeah.
We just want to do something different.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's hard for people, you know, especially for goofy radio hosts who have never actually done it, to understand how all-consuming doing a project, running a project, or being a high-level person on a project like that can be.
It is very much so, and it's the same on the commercial side. When you look at companies in our space, in the commercial side, you know, that's what we do for a living, is, you know, obviously helping other companies go after these contracts. They also get equally burned when they're working on an RFP that can take 6 months to 12 months, and they're doing the exact same thing every day, and it becomes a challenge on both sides, government and industry.
And with the talent level and the amount of money that are invested, I mean, if you want to just boil it right down, that are invested in these people on both sides,
mm-hmm.
You don't want these people getting so burnt that they just decide they've got to do something else. And then you're at the exit interview thing that we talked about just a few minutes ago. We've got to take another quick break. There's a couple more retention elements I want to discuss with you. Jeff Shen, my guest, is vice president at Red Team Consulting on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back to wrap up this hour in just a moment.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down walls and enabling face-to-face communication regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg, now a part of Cisco, developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
The challenge, protect U.S. Army helicopter crews from shoulder-fired, heat-seeking missiles. The answer, ITT Defense and Information Solutions has developed a lightweight, upgradable, and cost-effective solution that tracks the threat and blinds it instantly. Helicopters are vital to our defense. ITT is committed to their defense. ITT, doing essential things in extraordinary ways. Visit them at defense.itt.com.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 AM Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Attention AFGE members, government, and military employees looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances. Purchasing Power allows you to get items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. Purchase any laptop from July 15th through August 15th and receive a free custom skin. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com.
AFGE members are eligible for a 6% members only discount.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Jeff Shen is Vice President of Red Team Consulting and also the lead on a white paper from ACT-IAC about recruiting and retention in the federal acquisition workforce. It's been a conundrum for agencies for a long time, how to get good acquisition people and how to keep them. And, Jeff, this paper talks about management training. Training, of course, is one of the first things that's cut right after travel when budget times come. And yet people, the actual rank and file, tell their bosses and tell OPM through surveys over and over again that this is a really critical component, the way they view it, to help them grow their careers and want to stay where they are.
Right, and you know, management training is an absolutely critical thing that a lot of our participants in the government were saying was almost priority number one in terms of trying to keep their people. And it's almost even tied a little bit to the mentorship side to make sure that they have appropriate mentors. And then, you know, as they get promoted, they get the right management training. One of the acquisition officials on our committee cited that when she was actually promoted, she was a peer among all of her contracting officers, and she was promoted to now manage them. She wasn't actually given any training at all, and she kind of threw up her hands and says, she said, "Now what?"
Yeah. Another reason that people throw up their hands is because of the pay, and you spell it out pretty succinctly in this piece. One area to address for building our future acquisition leaders, there's no difference in pay between a supervisory contracting officer and a non-super. As acquisition leaders advance in their careers, federal agencies should address the pay band issue between these two positions. That seems like a no-brainer. Shouldn't supervisors make more?
You would think so, and that was pretty much a unanimous comment that all of our government acquisition officials had made. You know, it kind of begs the question, you know, why would I want to become a supervisory CO if I don't get paid more, yet I have twice the amount of responsibility?
Yes.
And so it's a big issue among a lot of different folks who just don't look to get promoted for the sake of getting promoted and actually want to get paid more. And so that was a very important thing that people wanted, obviously, the government to address.
Your team's got some solid recommendations in this piece, Jeff. I'm going to get it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. And I would love to have you come back and talk about this stuff in more detail. We've really only scratched the surface on how managers can deal with some of these issues.
I'd certainly love to come back. I appreciate you giving me the time, Francis.